It's a busy week in politics with elections, the global climate meetings, and more. Here to talk about it all, our Politics Monday duo. That's Amy Walter of the Cook Political Report with Amy Walter and Tamara Keith of NPR. Hello to both of you on this Monday, as we said, another big Monday. So, Tam, just thinking back for a minute to what Phil Rucker with the Washington Post was saying, there's been an enormous amount now of detailed reporting on what happened at the Capitol on January 6th, but there's still an enormous amount of disbelief out there about it. In fact, the poll that we do with NPR and with Marist, one of the questions we asked was whether people think refusing to concede an election harms democracy. 86% of Democrats agree with that, only 56% of Republicans, pointing directly back to what former President Trump has been saying.
So, conceding an election when you lose is a fundamental part of how American elections work. It's a fundamental part of our democracy. Sometimes our elections are close, sometimes they're messy, but when the loser concedes, it's over. And in the case of this last presidential election, the loser still hasn't conceded. At a rally, he proudly just very recently said, I've never conceded. The challenge for the Washington Post, the challenge for all of us going forward, is that there is no longer a shared set of facts. Mm. There wasn't an independent commission that all Americans could rally behind. It's not clear that there would ever be an independent commission that at this point in our divided state, all Americans would be able to rally behind. But the institution of the press, broadly speaking, has been so degraded in the eyes of the public that people aren't turning to the Washington Post to solve whether this happened or not. And as Phil said, we all saw it with our eyes on live TV, and yet there has been a rewriting of history that has happened so rapidly.
We've almost never seen anything like this.
No, and this is the challenge, I think, of our time, at least in the foreseeable future, because we are so deeply divided, as we know. We talk about a lot, the blue and red America, getting our information sources from two very different places. And we know for the foreseeable future that elections are going to be very close. We're going to have a lot of elections that look like 2016 and 2020, where it could come down to 10,000 votes here, 5,000 votes there. And so the fact that you have a significant portion of one party saying, if that happens and we're on the losing side, we just aren't going to accept it. That is very, very problematic because, again, the idea that we're going to get into landslide territory where it's really clear, right? One side just cleaned the other side's clock. That's just not happening, at least, as I said, for the foreseeable future.
In this very divided time in our country's history, which, of course, brings us to the elections that are taking place tomorrow. People have already been voting in Virginia and yes, New Jersey, Tam, governor's races. But it is expected, especially in Virginia, this could be a close contest. I'm not going to ask the two of you who you think is going to win. But I'd love to know, you know, what are you going to be looking for tomorrow?
One thing I'm looking for is what you just mentioned, which is that Virginia has changed its voting laws to make it easier to vote early, to vote absentee. And so more than 1 million people have already voted absentee in the state. Now, traditionally, Republicans have been really good at the early voting machine. But it's turned on its head, and Democrats are now emphasizing early voting, and Republicans are emphasizing same-day voting, which is why you have former President Donald Trump holding a tele-rally tonight for Glenn Youngkin, trying to get Republicans to show up. I have to say, the former president, I think by my count, has sent out 4 statements so far today about Glenn Youngkin, telling people to get out and vote, also raising the specter of fraud in the election, which there is no specter of fraud in the election, and Glenn Youngkin has said that he'll accept the result. But I think that this transformation where Republicans are really counting on same-day voting more than ever is leading to sort of an interesting dynamic. The only other thing I'll say I'm watching for is whether these contentious school board races that we heard about earlier, yes, this focus on schools, report, whether in areas that have had the most contentious issues around schools, whether their turnout is higher and whether Youngkin is able to get into what has been Democratic territory.
Yeah, that's a good point, because a lot of these are in these suburban areas where Democrats, at least in the last 5 or 6 years, have really done exceedingly well. And so we're going to get a chance to see if that movement in the suburbs, especially like those women that Lisa was talking to, whether that was a Trump-centric movement or whether it is more, you know, it's more longstanding than that. Turnout's going to be critical just in terms of the enthusiasm gap. The thing is, Donald Trump doesn't need to call in to get people to turn out and vote on the Republican side. It's Democrats who have much more of a turnout situation right now. The enthusiasm really lagging there. So the bigger challenge, I think, depending on what the margin is, right? Mm-hmm. It's not simply if Terry McAuliffe wins or if Glenn Youngkin wins, but how close this race is. Because if Virginia, a blue state, if Virginia gets a cold, a Democratic state gets a cold, then those swing states get a fever. And it suggests that if you are a Democrat sitting in a much more purple or red-leaning state, this is going to be a very challenging time if the environment looks like it is today at this time next year.
A lot of close races next year, and we'll talk about New Jersey another time. They're also voting for governor. Tomorrow, very quickly, a question, Tam, on what William Wrangham was reporting on earlier, that global climate summit. We know there's a lot of stake for the planet, for all of humankind, but what about at stake for President Biden, who's gone there at a time of lack of movement here in Washington?
Yeah, he wants to say that America is back. He wants to say, and he's saying, that America is leading, and at the G20, everybody wanted to talk to him, and they wanted to know what America is doing. But this country has had a one-term president, and now another one-term president. There's been a 180 on policy in terms of climate change. Congress is somewhere else. And so
one term so far.
And it can certainly, certainly President Biden could get all of his Build Back Better agenda in the next 3 weeks, and we'll all say, oh, there it is. But it's not as ambitious on climate as President Biden had wanted it to be, at least in the current form.
And that the two sides, to your point, the two sides see climate in an entirely different way. So if you're a foreign leader, you see the United States come to the table, you know if this is a Democratic administration, they're going to put climate on the top of the agenda. If it's a Republican administration, it's not going to be on the agenda. You see that not just from the presidents, but from voters. I mean, this was back in January, but Pew asked the question about what are your priorities? What do you think Congress, the president should do? Democrats, by more than, I think, 40 points, said climate versus Republicans. So, yes, if you're a world leader, you have to be thinking, I don't know, how much should I trust that this thing is going to happen? The president, of course, even apologizing for his predecessor pulling out of the Paris Agreement. There may be more talk like that in the next coming years.
I keep thinking back to that scene a moment ago, Greta Thunberg, the young teenage phenom scolding world leaders. What a spectacle. What a scene that is. Amy Walter, Tamara Keith, thank you both.
You're welcome.